Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
I want to offer my deepest condolences to the family, friends, political affiliates, and all of Barbados on the passing of our former Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Professor Owen Arthur. The first time I met him in person, I had taken some children to Bath and had made a wrong turn and ended up in a ditch. I could not get the car out. And this gentleman came over. He was trying to give me directions. Pull to the left. Okay. Ease it now. Ease on the gas. But I was scared. And he very kindly opened
took the car over.
No. He kindly opened the door and said, if you don't mind, you know, let me help you.
Really?
And I said, oh, thank you, thank you. And he got in and maneuvered that car, pressed on the gas, and got us out of the ditch. I did not realize at the time that it was when Arthur.
Uh-huh.
And when I realized, I was like, I said to him, oh my God, that is the Prime Minister. And everybody.
I hope you don't give up your car to every man who comes up to you, because you'll be in a lot of trouble.
Not at all. Not at all.
Well, what made you decide to trust him?
I'm sorry?
What made you decide to trust him with your car?
He just sounded like he knew what he was talking about. Yes. Because he was saying to me, you know, go over to the left a bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, go press on the gas and so on. But, like, you know, I didn't want to hurt the car. So, and actually he did make reference to that. He said, yes, you know, as a lady, I know you ladies can drive, but you have a tendency to be a bit too gentle. He did say that to me, and I never forgot that.
Man who does not want a gentlewoman, I gotta write that in the app.
No, then you're driving.
When you're driving, okay.
I guess he wanted
make the distinction.
I guess he wanted for me to realize that, you know, it was no condemnation of my driving ability,
right.
But just that I needed to put a bit more power
into
what I was doing.
Fair
and
enough.
I've always thought that we are so blessed in Barbados to be able to walk down the street and, as that gentleman say, walk up the aisle, picking up our groceries,
mm-hmm.
and to run into our Prime Minister, say hello at a funeral,
mm-hmm.
at the supermarket, mm-hmm. at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we are so blessed, and I hope that we never lose that.
I agree with you. I think it is one of the things that we... While we do understand that on official occasions, you know, the protocol is there, the officers are there for a reason, but there are times when, you know, to casually run into the Prime Minister and engage, especially your younger people, the ability to interact with Governors General, Prime Ministers, Ministers of Education, it gives them a sense of, you know, there is nobody too big to speak to us, and we're not too small to be able to approach anyone and have a conversation. And I think that is something that we need never, ever, ever to lose.
I hope and pray that we never lose it. We are blessed. We are special.
We are.
Yes.
I think we are.
And another thing I want to say, I want us to give roses when the person can still smell them. You know, I always say, all these sentiments, you know, once the person has passed, I wish that we would do a bit more of this while the person is alive. Take time out to say, thank you. I appreciate what you did. You know, I did not agree with such and such, but I really cherish this or appreciate that. I want us to do a bit more of that.
That's something we have to develop. I will agree with you on that. Too often, we remember or we say these things about people when they're gone. When they're alive, we tell them everything they do that is wrong. And I made a comment once on radio, and someone told me, don't bother, you will hear. I said to a friend of mine, I want to be alive 30 seconds after I die. And they asked me, why? I say, so I could hear my wife say he was a good man. Because I don't think I'd hear it while I was alive. But, you know, they tell me you'll hear it anyhow. But it is It is something we don't do often enough. I agree with you. Perhaps you're afraid to pick the roses for the thorns. Thank you for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks. 4341790, Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sir Dennis.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
How are you doing, man?
I'm trying to be good. And you?
I'm pretty good. Now, everybody had to say it. Mm-hmm. On. I usually don't say a friend because you could be associated with somebody, but they never classify you as the friend.
True. That's a fact. Right.
But I had a long time with Owen during the early stages of his and his office as leader of the opposition. Mm-hmm. Every day, myself, I should call myself last. You remember Everton Green? You call Hog Pen Green?
Right.
Prescott, old Prescott, that used to work at Central Bank.
Okay, right.
Owen and myself. And we sat
That's a strange
down.
Team.
We slot them every day and formulate certain strategies. I could
really?
Recall,
you were political strategists from all that?
I could recall the words of Owen to me. You know you always tell me like a lot of reading?
Uh-huh.
That came from Owen.
Okay.
Owen said to me one day, you have too much a good brain not to continue to read and keep those things as record. He said, when you do that, no politician from either side, as long as you have facts, they cannot deny. And myself and Green carried a campaign on Eric Seeley platform with the assistance of Owen on where to carry the campaign. I would not say much today, but at another time I will come back. And I will feed you with some more information because Owen used to listen to people. And I could recall he enlightened me on his journey from KFL to Mile and a Quarter at night. So when you heard people speaking about his leaning to Erbar, it was about his university education. And the last thing that we discussed, when he called me, he wants to talk to you about something. And he was discussing the reverse taxation. He said, a lot of people in this country do not realize that the poor people who work for $100 and $200 still got to pay that. And he said, I am going to relieve them by giving them a reverse tax credit. They never had any idea about it. So far, so much for today.
But let me ask you this before you run off. What made him engage you and the other people that he would have selected over a period of time to engage on these matters?
In 19 years, and his first outing, not the one that he was defeated by one vote, the next time when he came around.
When he came back, after the Spice Town flood brought a change in the fortunes of those in the north.
That, yeah. After you had the flood.
Right? Uh-huh. I remember that period well.
Yeah, I was working at the cement plant.
Okay.
And he was canvassing in Cemetery Lane. You know Cemetery Lane, close to Spice Town?
Very well, sir. So I worked at Haywood's. I know Spice Town.
Right, all right.
I know Spice Town like I know Bridgetown.
And he was canvassing up that area. Mm-hmm. And I saw him. And I said, Owen, man, come off the track. Come here and drink some drinks. And I remember very well from his
some plus and seven up.
And I said, pardon? And I tell him, listen, you can visit the people. But you see, when you drink a drink in a shop, those people is going to go home and tell the people, you know who he was drinking with?
X or Y, yeah.
You know,
and this is why I like to hear these stories, and I'll tell you why. Yeah? There are times I've looked at candidates running for a particular constituency, and in the old talk, general old talk with a few people as old talk with, I'd say to them, that person can't win that seat, you know.
Yeah.
And they say, why? I say, because they can't go in a rum shop and sit down and buy a rungs for the boys or just old talk. That person need to run in Christchurch and go Marine Gardens and you know, talk to the old ladies about the scones and the children in Canada. And they look at me and tell me, you talk so foolish. I tell them, no, you have to know. You have to know. Listen, when I came back to Barbados, let me say this here. Hold on, let me say this here. When I came back to Barbados in 81, hold on a second. When I came back to Barbados in 81, right?
Mm-hmm.
The election after that. I remember saying to a friend of mine, I can't call St. Peter because I didn't, you know, that one going there and one going the other way by election had me a little confused.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't read that one well. I said to him, nobody was beating David Simmons in St. Thomas
St.
because
Thomas.
One was after the death of Tom Adams, and Tom was fairly strong in St. Thomas. Two, David Simmons was articulate and good-looking, and you can't beat that combination. A man called me here on brass tacks and tell me that, what? I need to stop talking about my sexual preferences and cut me to shreds. I ask him, I know what you're talking about. And then tell me about all the ugly politicians. And the third person I mentioned was Sir Henry Ford. I tell him, nobody beat him in that Christchurch constituency. He will die and leave it there because of the type of person matching the constituency. Now, there are times when you would get the odd case that doesn't fit the bill. But there are some people who fit constituencies because of the way the people in that area relate to them on a personal level, which is why I asked you why the connection with Owen Arthur and you. Because I know he had to grow in the St. Peter constituency.
Exactly. All right, let me get two other points.
Mm-hmm.
The same Sir David, I live in St. Thomas.
Yeah, I know that.
Then Sir David came to St. Thomas. My wife was pregnant. But my son, who is 30-odd years now.
Okay.
And Sir David told me, that is going to be my first godchild. And not only did he answer to my son, he took my wife to the church with the baby the morning, the Sunday morning,
okay,
along with the godparent.
But you used to drive out, Mr. Barrow. How you got to be a bee?
But listen, if I tell you something, I work at Clark and Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
And I work between Jack Dare, Tom Adams, Lindsay Bolden, and Bruce St. John. And we all
converted.
Had a good rapport there in Fifth Fourth Street. Clark and Tucker was in Fifth Fourth Street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the officers was all around me.
Okay.
And those people were human beings that come out and talk to you. You answer, but when I leave the Democratic Labour Party, I leave the Democratic Labour Party at the expulsion of Joy Edwards in 1981,
okay,
because I had favored Joy Edwards a lot.
And you left the BLP at the expulsion of whom?
Pardon?
And you left the BLP with the expulsion of whom? Or you haven't left the BLP yet?
No.
I'm only pulling your leg. That's
carefully when I talk and you say, I say,
I know.
I join one political party.
I know that.
But I support the Barbados Labour Party, and you know, when you do wrong, I tell you wrong.
I ain't got a problem with that, you know. I was just pulling your leg.
Yeah. But the other point, though, that I want to say about Owen,
mm-hmm,
his first opposition spokesman on finance,
right,
was against Richie Haynes.
Mm-hmm.
Then he came down from Parliament. Myself and Green was downstairs, and he used to call me old boy.
Mm-hmm.
He asked me, what you think about that presentation? That was his first.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him it was a good presentation, but it didn't merit anything. You licked the wind out the sail of the budget. He asked me what he did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I said you was replying and laughing all the time. If you presenting a reply to a budget, you must look serious. You must look serious, let people understand you're serious about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he chuckled and he said, you would never see me do that again. That is a good athlete.
You know, I have to tell you, this is the human side of Owen Arthur that I wanted to hear, which is why I said I wanted to hear people like John Williams. I want to hear people like Gibson, who, you know, the B-man, because I've seen him with these people, seen him around what you would call ordinary people, they, you know, not the politicians. And you see a different side of the political animal when you see them in those settings, because they joke, they laugh, they drop their guard, and they interact with you at a different level. And to me, this is what makes a politician successful. And that's why today, and I'll say this to you because you and I talk I think a political level without getting personal and swiping. I will say this to you. One of the things that disappoints me today when I look at what's happening with politics in Barbados is that I don't see that level of engagement with people who are saying they want to get into politics. They seem to start from the top and figure that, you know, if I present myself and if I do press conferences and that's the way. The old method of doing things, the women's group, the youth movements, the walking through and getting known, seems to be moving away. People seem to go to this, you know, send your WhatsApp, send you some caricature, somebody write a nasty letter, and that's the way to engage the public, because people passing it around and it's trending and they're laughing. And to me, that's not the politics that I know in any Caribbean country that I've worked with. I mean, whether I liked him or not, I didn't. Eric Gehry could be found in any bar on the waterfront with anybody buying a drink and old talking. Eric Williams was a little aloof, but you know, if you ran into him in a private setting, he would be a normal person. Let me put it that way, right? Ralph Gonzalez. I could go through a whole lot of them that I ran into during the course of the work that I do, and the way they interact with everybody, from somebody in the market to a taxi driver to anybody, you could tell that this person is known and either appreciated or hated, or you know, frightened the public.
That is, I agree, sir. I know that you will laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the two things I can give you that I witnessed personally, mm-hmm. because I work in the town, I got to come to the country. I used to be on to the last bus, but I would spend my time in Parliament. I saw Sir Henry, I would say, in his most aggressive mode after Parliament, when he and the late Earl Walnabar had a little conflict. Mm-hmm. And if you think that Henry was easy, he wasn't easy. Now, Henry, probably if he's listening, you hear me, because he know, I know.
He was an erudite spokesperson, but he's sharp like razors, man.
Yeah.
The old English way of cutting into shreds.
The other one that I listened to, I was in Parliament, and if Sir the Prime Minister's father, is listening, he will remember this. I was in Parliament when the late Sir Frank Walker got up and attacked Sir Elliot Motley in one of the most vigorous and aggressive manner, mm-hmm. and telling him that. I remember all of those speeches, because I never used to leave Parliament. I always had a collection of debates. That time used to be Hansard. And what I see, I read. So when I hear people, and I'm glad this morning that when I hear people like Clyde Maskell and those fellas making mention mm-hmm. of Owen Harper, mm-hmm. I ask myself, I wonder if the public is listening.
I hope so too. You know, sir, I am sorry that we have thrown away so much of our stuff, because when you listen to, and I have listened to some of them on the old recordings that we have of the contributions of Sir Henry Ford, Sir Harold St. John, in the special, and the years of the Three Blind Mice and Dr. Haynes. When you listen to the contributions in Parliament, the precise use of language, the political cut that sometimes you wince when you hear it. But then when they interacted outside of Parliament, I remember sitting in Studio 3, David Ellis was the host, I was the producer, and two titans from each party. On one side, you had Branford Tate. So Branford was sitting, and opposite him was Lionel Craig. And the two of them were going at it in the most jovial of manners. You know, I mean, Branford would say, I keep telling you, don't do that. And they were laughing and joking, because they were no longer political adversaries, but they were still politicians under, you know, everything else that they were. Those things, I think, the young people of Barbados, those today who can't disagree with each other without reaching for a weapon, and those who don't seem to understand how politics shapes the tone of a nation, need to hear some of those contributions, and from people like you who walked the walk with them. I want to thank you. I really enjoy our exchanges, and I look forward to more of them. And to those who told me I didn't ask John Williams to join me, I sent him a message yesterday. I sent him one last night, and I spoke to him this morning as well. I beg people. I think people sometimes think I have more power than I do. But perhaps there are people who don't want to talk to me on air. Just saying. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. We are, of course, awaiting word from the Minister of Home Affairs, who we heard should be issuing a statement at about 1:30. Haven't heard anything from our newsroom yet, so we'll continue to stand by. And Brass Tacks continues until 2. We'll bring you that statement once we get it. Good afternoon.
Hey, Dennis.
Hey.
This is Johnny Tudor, Joseph Tudor.
Joseph Johnny Tudor, I think, Joseph. No, the Reverend. Yes,
the
sir.
Reverend, yes.
How are you,
well,
sir?
Well, actually, I am at the Ministry of Home Affairs right now.
Okay.
You were talking about it just now.
Mm-hmm.
But I called to obviously pay my respect to a very long and dear friend in the name of my Nata.
Mm-hmm.
Our friendship goes back many years, to the extent that my son is called Owen, and he is the godfather of my last son, called Joseph Adam Errol, and he is his godfather.
Okay.
Owen Arthur and I had an amazing relationship as two individuals, and I'm calling because he brought to politics in Barbados a clear understanding of the structure of who governed Barbados, the type of leaders that we had going back from the colonial masters, coming through the early days, Mr. Grantley Adams and them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were both two young men who loved Errol Barrow and the Democratic Liberal Party very much. And one evening, the two of us were by the O'Level Institute, and it was about 6-7 o'clock, and the then Prime Minister, Tom Adams, was driving, coming up Bank Hall in front of the O'Level Institute. And he saw the two of us on the sidewalk. And he stopped the car abruptly when he spotted Wayne and I talking on the sidewalk. And he reversed a little bit and came to the two of us and said, "Just the two men that I want. I have to take you all from the Democratic Labour Party. I want you to run in St. Peter, and I want you to replace Don Blackman in the Ivy. I got the two men right here that I want." So he caught both Wainwright and myself off guard, but Tom was like that. He in fact referred to the fact that my family and the Adams family are first cousins. But despite that, he knew that I was a member of the Democratic Labour Party. And he also knew that Wayne was an embracer of the Democratic Labour Party. So when he left, he drove off, and he said to Wayne, "But we can't do that, because you are them, I am a them, so how are you going and run in St. Peter's to replace Burton Hines? And how are you going to the BLP and run against Don Blackman? That can't work." So I said, "But if you do that, I'm going to go to St. Peter's, and I'm going to canvass against you. You are my friend, and don't go." He said something to me that was very, very, very strange. He said, "You know what? I hear you, but I want you to understand, see? Wayne Arthur, I recognize within the Barbados Labour Party that there's a lot of talent. The problem and the perception is that they have a strong conservative element that does not fit all Barbadians coming out of the colonial days, coming out to the sugar days, and so forth." And he said, "We have got to be able to take Barbados along the model that was set by Tom Adams in terms of deficit financing and other divestment of the sugar industry and things like that. And, you know, it stuck with me. And then I was not shocked when he decided to accept to go and run in St. Peter. Needless to say, I went to support the Billy Cop in St. Peter, even though he was my very, very, very good friend. But he would call me morning, noon, and night to tell me, but you can't do that. You are my friend. But despite politics, Owen Arthur would call you every day. When he was prime minister, he would call, and he would tell you about this, about that, how he felt about it. He was brutally honest with his feelings. And he stuck to his belief. If he felt strong about the matter, it didn't matter whether he was perceived to a B or D or whatever. But he brought the inclusion of politics.
Let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question, though. When the entire party executive resigned from that seat that you eventually ended up in, how difficult or how easy was it for you to learn and get accepted by the constituency?
You, instant, Michael East, I know almost everybody in St. Michael East by heart.
Really?
Because I used to be the calendar boy, and I had to carry out food from my grandmother, mother, all through Liquid Village, all around.
So you were deep in the constituency then. It wasn't a strange place for you?
No, because you have to remember that the Tudor family and the Adams family came out of my Lord's Hill.
Yeah.
They are our cousins. They were married to the Steels. And we grew up with each other. And my father, the late Joe Tudor, was everywhere in the country.
Well, he was an institution.
No. And one of the mysteries is that when I was asked to give away in 1986 to Don Blackman, I did it willingly because Don Blackman was a good representative and the people loved him. The point is that I felt that he should have invited Trevor Prescott to have been the alternative and not me. And when we met on the day of the nomination, I told him, make sure that it is that we will be supporting Trevor Prescott. And he said, no, you were good to me. You gave up the seat in 1986. You're willing to run. And we had that little story about that Tom wanted me to be with the Barbados Liberal Party. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, Tom Adams' family are family to me. So I had no problem with Tom Adams. In fact, I was very close to Tom Adams. And those men, Tom Adams, Henry Ford, and those great politicians are very fair. Because you know what? They did not care which side of the fence you represented. They always look for people that they could teach and explain. Mm-hmm. And why we have this issue between B and D, it is not necessary. Because there are good brains on both sides of the fence. I admire Clyde Maskell because Clyde Maskell was a member of the Barbados Liberal of the Democratic Labour Party. But he, Hamila, myself, Rudy Grant, Kerry Simmons, a whole number of us will not work with the Barbados Liberal Party. Mm-hmm. And that's fine because Owen Arthur, like the present Prime Minister Mia Motley, they have brought an understanding that Barbados is not about a one-sided political fence. And they both did a magnificent job in making that very clear to the people of Barbados. That is why the present Prime Minister will also succeed.
Well, let me ask you this question as well then. The divisions we see and hear from party supporters and the cry for a more equitable distribution of the financial earnings from the country, is it therefore more about who holds the party purse strings, who Don Blackman called the shadows of whatever color, white or any other color these days? Is that where the division comes, or is it the philosophy of if you're Douglas Leopold Phillips, you will not eat or only share the fatted calf if you belong to the other party? What causes the divisions? Because you've moved from both sides. You talk about family connections. You talk about community connections. And you talk about personal relationships. So what makes the division so stark in people's minds?
Dennis, the history of Barbados, right?
Mm-hmm.
Goes back from the colonial days where, for example, when we were marketing our sugar production of sugar in the European market, well, in Britain, the Barbados Shipping and Trading were paid a commission for doing nothing except being appointed to be the marketing agent. So every year, they got a fat check. None of those members were part of the general diaspora of Barbados. It was tilted very strongly to the conservative element in the country. Mm-hmm. And all of the major businesses in Barbados had favoritism or some kind of inside track that you could get what was necessary to expand the business. That was not available to the masses of people in Barbados. And throughout the whole world, it's still not available. And we have to correct those kind of disparities in the society. Bit by bit, the early leaders under Errol Barrow, Sandy Ford, and all of them were scared because they always felt that when the black members of the society became the controllers of government, that they would do what the profile all of us do, to be reckless, to spend the money as we like, and didn't give us the credit to be individuals who could market and use the available funds to Barbados for the benefit of many more.
But you're sitting... Go ahead. The policies?
That are favorable to more people.
But you're sitting in a... But you're sitting in a position where your name, Tudor, represents a certain class of Barbadian society. And while, you know, Joe Tudor was the comedian side of it, you have the other Tudors who represented the, well, the intellectual side of the family, and then the, you know, the half-color equation. Was it difficult, or was it easier because of those connections?
It was very difficult because you remember that the Tudor family played a role in both the Barbados Labour Party formation
and the Democratic Labour Party.
Mm. Right. So I was a little boy listening to, in my own home, with Sir Grantley, Cammy Tudor, Errol Barrow, and all of them were members of the Barbados Labour Party.
Right.
So I grew up as a young boy. I remember in Hurricane Janet, I didn't know who was a B and who was a D, because all of them were under one argument about how they would run Barbados coming after the colonial masters. Mm-hmm. I witnessed all of that as a young boy. Mm-hmm. So I could see no division between the Barrow policies and everything, because they all were the same. The biggest argument that they had was that Sir Grantley Adams was the powerhouse when it came to the sugar workers. And the formation of the Barbados Workers' Union came, that is where his power lied. That is where his power lied. So they were in disagreement with him.
Okay.
And those were the kind of arguments that used to take place. Barbados needs to be diversified. Yeah.
From back in all that time, and it still continues. Thank you very much, Joseph Onesimus Tudor, the Reverend. One more, John? No, okay. One more, he says. Thank you very much for your contribution. Brass Tax, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you today?
I am trying to be good, sir. How are you?
Oh, you're not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
First, I would like to make two contributions.
Mm-hmm.
With respect to Sir Owen Arthur,
mm-hmm.
and how he managed the country, and how he gave vision to the old and young people of this country. What mostly resonates in my mind is how he, when he won the government, he told the young people not to settle for the bronze nor the silver, to go for the gold. And those words has a lasting impression on me. I remember one morning I was taking my daughter to school, and she said, "Daddy, did you hear what the Prime Minister said?" I asked what. She said, "The Prime Minister go for the goal, and I am going to do so." And, you know, that is the fitting characteristics of a good leader, when they can say and do things to transform a nation. Now, during those days, a lot of young people been into the university and they rise and completed their education and became successful. And those were the days when the country was fine on all six cylinders. We have a lot of very young people in this country who means well. And the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister Arthur, he was very good in running this country. And I will complete by saying, on behalf of my family and I, we would like to express our deepest sympathy and our most warmest heartfelt condolences to the Arthur family, especially his wife, children, Richard Arthur, and family. And I hope, not just hope, but I know that perpetual light shines upon him. And with these few words, I thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to make a contribution. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. I think that's a good point at which to thank you and the others who have contributed to this, the Tuesday edition of Dr. Brass Tacks. Thank you, John Stout, for taking care of things technical. On behalf of the team, I'm Dennis Johnson. Have a good afternoon.